If needlework is your passion, whether you're stitching by hand, machine, or mixing it all up, you're going to want to hear about the Mr. X Stitch Contemporary Needlework Prize 2025. This prize celebrates the best in modern stitch and it's open to creatives from all around the world, whether you're a student or an emerging artist or a seasoned professional. And the best part, you don't have to send your work anywhere. Just upload high-resolution images to a private folder we will send you after you enter. You can enter more than one category, for instance, hand embroidery and 3D textiles. Just grab an entry for each one. And if you've got a student ID, you can get 50% off the entry price as well. The deadline for entering is 30th of June 2025, and entries are now open at xstitchmag.com/prize-entry. Thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Bookmarked Hub by Search Press and David and Charles, and the legends at Lowry Workstands. If you've got the stitch bug, this is your time. Show us what you've got. Enter the prize now. Visit xstitchmag.com/prize-entry to get your ticket today. Welcome to Needle Exchange, the podcast where creativity and conversation collide. This is the second part of my Needle Exchange with American embroidery artist Stephanie Kelly Clark. In this episode, we go deeper into Steph's evolving practice from small stitched dwellings to ambitious 3D florals and even the animal kingdom. Steph reflects on working at scale, embracing negative space and creating pieces that feel like modern museum specimens. I loved chatting with Steph. She's one of those artists that I've known for over a decade, and yet this was the first time we'd had a conversation. I know, it's so weird, isn't it? You can do that. We can have loads of backwards and forwards on social, but when you actually get to meet them for real, it's so good. I so enjoyed having her on, and hopefully I'll get to have another needle exchange with her at some point in the future. If you want to meet another artist that I also have a massive needlework crush on, then check out episodes 45 and 46 with the mighty Danielle Clough. That was another great one. Exactly the same vibe. If I got those two in a room together, OMG, it would be amazing. As always, I'd love your support. Feel free to follow Mr. X Stitch on Instagram or visit the Needle Exchange website, needle.exchange, only four E's, remember that, to find out other episodes. And I'll be back next week with somebody else from another part of the Stitched universe. So until then, enjoy the show. I'm interested as well, because, yeah, so you said before that there's this thing about you being a contemporary artist and making sure that your art feels contemporary.
Yeah.
And I sort of, I think I know what you mean when I look at your work. I was looking at that piece, I Love Jake Ryan, a little while ago, which is a big old set of houses. Like, it's a big old piece, isn't it? It's like 2 foot by 3 foot or something.
Yeah.
It's got houses, it's got pylons.
It was my first big piece, I think. Like, everything else, I worked kind of small. Like, I think the biggest canvas I had worked on since then was a 12 by 12. Most of my pieces were still very small because they were small houses. And that piece was actually a commission for Jimmy Kimmel. And
nice.
No, the whole story was just a hoot how it came to be.
Come on.
But he... Well, so he, I had a show in LA and it was part of the Fresh Start show, and it was all the proceeds go to helping bring arts into the schools here. And, anyways, I got an email not long after that show. I had sold out, and I got an email from that show, and it was this gentleman by the name of James, and he said, "Hey, I saw your stuff at the show. It sold out, so I wasn't able to buy a piece, but I want to commission you to do something. Like, what's, you know?" And so I sent him all the information, and he's like, "Well, I have this. This is my budget. Do whatever you want."
And I was like, "Thank you very much."
Most people are very particular what they want when it comes to commissions. No one ever gives me free rein. But I had this idea for a while, and I was like, oh, and I was like, this would be a great opportunity to use this idea that I have, and it'll be rad. And so we agreed to it, and then bam, I get pregnant with my first child, and I have a horrible, horrible, rough pregnancy because I'm sick the whole entire time. I have HG pregnancies, and it was brutal, and it was my first, so I didn't know what I was doing. And I messaged him probably halfway through, well, like early on in the pregnancy, and I said, hey, I'm just going to have to put you on hold because I'm pregnant and I'm sick, and I'll, you know, and he's like, don't even worry about it. He's like, my wife is actually sick too right now because she's pregnant and she's having a hard time. I know how it goes. He was really sweet and understanding, and then got through the pregnancy, and then I contacted him and was like, hey, are we still on? And he's like, let's go. And then I finished the piece, and around the same time, I get Instagram for the first time ever. I was a late person to the Instagram world. My sister finally talked me into it, and for some reason, when I signed up, it had linked every email in my email inbox. And so I don't know how many friends I was following. And I'm like, who are all these people? And then I start looking. I notice a lot of them are my like clients' names of people's commissions that I've done. And I was like, oh, this synced my email. So I'm having to go through and delete everyone that I don't know. And I come up on Jimmy Kimmel's, his personal page. His personal page. And I was like, why am I following Jimmy Kimmel? And then I like noticed the emails and I matched up the emails. I was like, oh, this whole time I have been conversing with Jimmy Kimmel, and he just called himself James. And then after that, when I was like finishing off this piece, and I was like all nervous, and I felt like I had to be like funny and witty. Yeah, ended up being Jimmy. He was fantastic. But the reason why I named it I Love Jake Ryan, which I totally got the reference immediately because it's from 16 Candles. And every girl loves Jake Ryan from 16 Candles. And when it came time to deliver the piece, he sent over the address and to have it shipped. And instead of having Jimmy or James or whatever on the package for delivered, he had me put Jake Ryan. And I knew he was referencing 16 Candles. And on the package, I put I Heart Jake Ryan from the movie. But anyways, so that's kind of how that story became. But that piece was just an idea out of my head. And I wanted to just put it down and see how it worked. And it did. And I loved it. And it was so fun. But that was my very first, I'd say, big piece I ever did. And so from then on, I was like, I want to work in larger scale. And I have since then. So
but you've also got this ability to like, I don't know, there's a lot of like negative space going on in there. I wonder whether there are certain, you know, it's not full coverage.
I love the negative space. I always have. I don't know if it's just because it's just something that's natural visually stimulating for me, but also like comforting for me. I like the empty space because I like that rest, because I like the full focus. I want you to get in there and get up close in my work. And I don't want the background taking away from it. I want people to get in there and see, oh, look, she used like so many different colors in there. And the times that I've maybe put too much in the back or put it, just it takes away from the embroidery itself. I just like the visual appeal of it, especially too. It's that I think that natural ability that some artists have, whether it's with color or composition on a page, but it's like I want the eye to jump where it needs to jump. And when I did the little houses, I would do the homes, and then any of the foliage on the outside would just be a line work, line drawing. And I still do that. I don't know. I like it because I'm like, I don't want all the trees and the foliage around the house to take away from the house. And I just, and so that was just a decision I made and I liked it. And with the big empty space, sometimes I'll put like a couple little birds flying up in the air just to like bring your eye up into the empty space for a moment, like I guess a rest, and then you can come back to the main focal point. What do they call it? The Holy Trinity. Make the eye jump. And I like to do that also with color. Make the eye move around the work. I'll put like a little, like a bright red spot in a corner to make your eye move around the piece. So composition's always just been something that I love, and I just naturally do. I took a design class for fun my senior year, and the teacher was like, I can always tell who the artists are here versus the architect students who are having to take the class. Mm-hmm. And there was very little of fine art students that actually would take these design classes. But he said he could always tell who the artists are because they just know composition so well. And I just think with some artists, it just comes natural.
Yeah. And it does. I think that's the problem with your work, is it's effortless in appearance. You know, you just look at it, whether it's a house that's on a cliff face and the cliff face is just a single line, or like you say, you just do these placements, like you just put a bit of land and it's just like one straight line or something, and you just you look at it and you're just like, oh. It's about all the time like that. It's so simple. Do you do much editing? Like, I know you said you sketch things out in the first place, but when you're stitching, do you ever have to dial back what you've done, or is it like it all just goes in according to plan?
A lot of my work actually goes according to plan. The only time it doesn't go according to plan, I feel like, is if I run out of time. A piece just ended up taking way longer than I thought, which is pretty much all the time, especially as I've gotten older. I do work fast. That is one thing I would always tell myself, oh, my work would be so much better if I would just slow down. And I have slowed down over the years. But usually what I envision before going in is usually what the outcome is. If it is editing, it's just little things here and there. It's not much. I usually have the simple idea going in.
Yeah, I seem to do quite a lot of like windows with little pieces of fabric. There's these little nods, aren't there, where you have like these little bits of textiles thrown in.
Well, with the first series I did, and I haven't done this in a while. When I do the homes now, I just embroider the windows. But the series I had with the houses, it was actually, the windows were cut out. And you can see in the back, I would stretch a print of some sort, a printed fabric or a pattern. And so when you can see in the windows, it would just be like this printed pattern. And then if you had backlight behind it, the light would shine through and you would see this pattern through the windows. And when I did the series, I did the dwelling series, the pattern fabric that I chose for the houses kind of represented the person who lived in it, or who I thought lived in it. And that kind of went in with the concept of the series as well.
Do you think in series quite a lot? Because I know you've definitely seemed to go through like phases. You've like had like a cloud phase. You've had a wave phase.
I'll have these ideas and I'm like, I need to do them right now. And then when I'm done, I'm like, all right, well, that's out of my system. And then I'll move on. Yeah, I do find myself working in series. And right now, the pieces I'm doing, it's going to be three of them. It's going to be a series of work. I think it depends on the concept and what I'm trying to talk about, but I like the variety of ways I can tell the story. And so I'm always like, there's never just one way of doing it. It depends on the pieces. Sometimes when I do these women shows every year, they'll usually give us a theme, and then you make a one piece based off that theme. And so those are usually ideas where it works best as just one individual piece. But sometimes I want more than one image to tell a whole story. So I guess I do work in series more than I realized.
And then frustratingly as well, not only do you do like effortless landscapes, but I don't know, you'll do some really nice portraits. You've been doing animals lately, just because I guess there wasn't enough challenge.
And that's where I'm like headed to now. Well, it started with when I started dabbling in 3D work with embroidery. First of all, I've always loved 3D work. That's actually, I've always been visually, I love. When I go to art shows and museums and galleries, I love the 3D work. And I think it's always something it's because I was like envious of. I just, my brain can never work in 3D. And the mediums were always, I'm not a fan of most 3D mediums. But when I first started, I started with bugs. I played around with bugs. I think that was my first 3D. And then that went to florals. And then I went into birds. And so now with the pieces I'm working on now, it's going to be full on animals. I'm doing a squirrel right now. So I'm like, this is, I finally found like Stephanie's way of doing 3D that I love, that I actually am in love with, instead of like trying to force myself to do 3D with mediums that I just don't want to do. And I've seen other artists doing 3D work with embroidery, and it just has inspired me to do it. And I've been loving the problem solving that goes into, because I don't think in 3D. It's like, okay, how am I going to create this with some wire and fabric and thread? And the trial and error has been really fun, and the experimenting has been really fun and enjoyable. So,
Even those flowers as well. I remember when you started putting those flowers up, and you're like, and then you've done this like, they're arrangements of flowers, but I don't know, are they like, almost like they're taped on to things, and you've just got this real like nonchalant way about it or something, as though it's just kind of put them there. These ones have still got their roots on it, and yet every single bit of that is like a deliberate embroidery decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had the idea when I did an art residency in Park City at the Kimball Art Center. And we had to, how many of us were in this residency? There was a little handful of us. And we had a week to create a big project. And we were pulling all-nighters. And my idea was, well, I just want a big slab of fabric. And then I want it to look like someone just threw flowers all over it. Just like threw it down. And some might be taped on or tacked on. And I wanted it to be kind of like a representation of a family tree. And so instead of, your traditional family trees, my family tree is just flowers representing family members. And it's just kind of a chaotic mess, which I think most families are. And so that was my kin piece that I did. And it was always evolving, and that thing evolved. And now it was purchased by this hotel where they had local artists. It's just a small hotel that like will house skiers and outdoor athletes. And they have in each room, a local artist created a piece for it, and they purchased kin for that piece. And so I'm like, I guess it's finally done. But that thing ended up, and you could see that piece on my website and also on my Instagram. I mean, it has yarn and string and beading and all kinds of fun. And it's just kind of like this mess. But that's the first piece that's kind of, I started incorporating beading in the work and yarn and wool and other different fiber mediums. And so then that idea was still in my mind. And then that's when I did the piece I did last year, where I wanted it to look like a museum display of, a herbarium of plants and each one of those plants represents someone or an experience in my life that really has transformed me in some way or has made some sort of impact on me. So it was a really personal piece, but that's kind of where I've been and I'm still in, is this this mode where I have something on display behind plexi with labels. And I did my daffodil piece recently, which was that kind of, it was the life cycle of, or not a daffodil, but a dandelion. It was the life cycle of a dandelion, because I'm doing a daffodil right now with another piece. But the pieces that I'm doing right now that are incorporating animals is also that same concept. It's like a museum piece of a life cycle of something on display. So
what is all this stuff? Because there's just this theme of like real things. I don't know whether, when you do your houses, are they based on real houses? Or are they just houses in your imagination?
Some of them are based on real houses that I just thought were interesting. And, or like when I was living in Salt Lake City, where I lived in the avenues, there's these just adorable quaint homes that I would take pictures of. But a lot of them were just in my imagination, and I would find references and kind of put them together to make a house that I would like. Like, I like this house, the architecture of this house, but I'm going to make it pink, or I'm going to make it a different color, like a crazy color.
If you're spending so many hours, particularly with the flowers and stuff, and I think I've had this conversation with other people before, if you're recreating these things in these different formats, how does that change your appreciation of those things? Do you have flowers that you really like that are a total pain in the bum to try and remake? Is there any of that kind of thing that it's changed your relationship with the subject?
Oh, absolutely. That's a really good question. It really has. But then there's part of me that's like, oh, like a daffodil, for example, is really hard to do with embroidery, because sometimes I like to use the embroidery either as part of the thread, as part of the flower, or I can actually embroider the actual petal. For example, the middle of a daffodil, comes up like a cone, and I can either actually embroider that on a piece of fabric and try to sculpt it and then connect it, the parts, like a puzzle when it comes to the flowers, or I can just use thread just by itself and make it loopy around and use the actual thread. And then same with when I did my life cycle of the dandelion. The dandelion, the part where, it gets to the seeding, when you blow it and the little wisps fly away, like, how do I embroider that? And I want it to make it look realistic, so I can go in and actually get wire and embroider each little tiny seed and put it in that way. Visually, is it going to look good? Or I can just use a bunch of thread and make it a puffball and use the colors of the thread to make it look like a 3D version of it. But I don't necessarily think it changes. In fact, it changes my relationship to appreciate the flower even more, to appreciate the what nature can do. just naturally. And here I am trying to recreate that with a medium. I feel like probably most 3D artists or sculptors go through that, like trying to recreate something from nature out of something that is far from nature.
I like that you're still trying to find those shortcuts in the same way as we were talking before about like lines that can be cliffs that can be lines, mm-hmm. negative space. You're still trying to like have that little conversation as you're making these things.
Yeah.
How far you can pull away from reality without pulling away from reality.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's funny. That's good. Let's pivot.
Yeah.
Onto the tough questions just for a laugh.
Yeah.
Come on. Mm-hmm. This is going to be interesting. There's part of me thinks I'll know half of what you're talking about. There's part of me thinks I ain't going to have a clue about half of your cultural references. So this is going to be a wild ride. I'm going to take some notes. Do you have a favorite band / album?
Okay. I wrote these down because...
Have you gone for favorites that are genuinely your favorites or favorites that people would expect artist Stephanie Clark to have?
Okay. This was hard because I am a big music connoisseur, and I'm like, you can't ask me what my favorite album is, because I don't, like, do I have a favorite album? I do have a slew of favorite artists, but I also just have to go off of, I guess, what I'm into at the moment. And so I'm like, okay, if I have to pick one, someone said, had a gun up to my head, you have to choose. Right now, it's George Harrison's All Things Must Pass.
Okay.
It's always been an album that, of course, I've loved. Beatles have always been a huge, like, it. I don't know. It's the Beatles.
Yeah, it's the Beatles.
It's, you know, it's in my psyche. It's in my subconscious. You're raised with them. I'm raised with them. And then as you become an adult and you appreciate them, and I married a huge Beatles fan. And anyways, but lately I think too with whatever music I'm listening to, it's how I'm feeling it in the moment. It's what I'm experiencing in my life in the moment. It's what I'm going through. And for some reason, All Things Must Pass is one that this year I've been, it's like that album has been like big for me. I could say almost every song on it is nearly perfect. And yeah, so I would say right now, I had to answer it. It's George Harrison's All Things Must Pass.
I'm glad you mentioned the Beatles, though, because on your Insta, you've got those nested dolls. I was going to go off on a whole nested doll tangent because I think there's something there. Let's just talk about your nested dolls for a minute.
That is my little side guilty pleasure, or my little side thing. I can't remember. Oh, the first one I did was for a friend. I created all of his favorite Wes Anderson characters. So I guess my very first nesting dolls creation was an ode to Wes Anderson. And it was just a fun idea I wanted to do. And then from then on, it's like I'll just randomly do them as gifts for people. Family members will want their family done, and I'll just do it because I have my embroidery that I love dearly, but I do have these little side things that I like to do as kind of like a rest from embroidery. It's my little break from embroidery. And it's also, I get to paint. And sometimes I forget how much I do like painting. And I know it's kind of revisiting my roots a little bit when I go and paint every time. So it's just like this nice little thing, and it's a comfort thing. It's therapeutic. I'll just sit on my bed and paint these nesting dolls. I can get just super into it. And so my recent ones I did was the Sergeant Peppers, and I did them for my friend's daughter who I love. She's my volleyball partner. She's 14 and she's obsessed with the Beatles, and And so for Christmas, I was like, I gotta make her Beatles nesting dolls. I've been wanting to do the Beatles nesting dolls for a long time now. Let's do it. And it was a lot of fun.
There's two other things to mention then. One, Mary and I went to the Beatles Museum up in Liverpool. We only live like 45 minutes from Liverpool, so we went and did it one time or whatever. It still blows my mind that their albums were all in like a 7-year period. Yeah. The whole thing, start to finish, isn't it? Yeah. That's insane.
That many like masterpieces in such a short amount of time. Me and my husband were having that same discussion just the other day about that. Like, they're true artists for sure.
Mm. Yeah, but they just ground it out, didn't they? Did you watch Get Back? Did you see the Peter Jackson documentary thing?
Yes. It really. I mean, every time I watch a documentary or kind of in the lives of the Beatles, it's mind blowing, but it's fun. But it's also like, I don't know, you see them as like these majestic people who aren't real, but they're very real. And I do like seeing the realness in the human sides of them. But yeah, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. That's what I thought. I thought Get Back was cool because it just felt like you were hanging out with
them.
And you were like, and to be honest, in some ways, that one made me just think, Paul McCartney. I was like, he's hella cool in that. He's got the beard.
Yeah, you really get to know them, their personalities. And I'm like, oh, I realize how silly John really is and how Paul was the straight man that was trying to get everyone to freaking pay attention. And
yeah, obviously, yeah.
It changed my ideas of Yoko and the roles the girlfriends and the wives played, you know, where they would just sit back in the studio and why the guys would just do their thing. And it's just, there's something magical about watching in front of you a song that everyone knows and is known for so long, like them creating it right in front of your eyes. Yeah. And it's like,
yeah.
As an artist, that was the most the most impactful thing when I would watch that is just like, oh, we get to see the process, like the art making happen. And that's exciting.
Yeah, it's the same. Like I've got the some early Elton John albums again, because I think a lot of these people when I was born were just fully formed. Elton John's greatest hits already done, you know, so you don't get to understand Caribou and all the strange albums that he did when he first started out. I think there's something nice about unearthing those gems.
Mm-hmm.
I also, for my birthday this year, we went to see ABBA Voyage. I don't know how you feel about ABBA.
I love ABBA. I just had a discussion with my twin sister and one of my good friends. She loves ABBA, and we talked about how we like ABBA. My twin sister's like, I don't like ABBA. Their songs get stuck in my head. I was like, I think that's the point of ABBA.
The thing about ABBA was that, so it's in this arena, and obviously the spectacle of the whole holograms and everything, like, I wept. I wept about 8 times during the whole thing because it was so good.
That's amazing. But
also, like, my mum used to play ABBA when I was a kid all of this sort of stuff. So, and my wife was looking at me and she'd be having a great time. And I'm just like, I can't really stop crying now. I was just like, I'm just going to have to go with it. And I'm like therapizing myself at the same time, going, why am I crying at all this stuff? You know, what does it all mean?
You're like deep into my inner childhood. What?
I swear to God. But they missed a trick because they could have done ABBA Voyage nesting dolls. There are 4 of them. They could have nested doll them and they didn't. And I was like, oh, I would have gone away with those.
Those would have been amazing.
So close. Christmas present hint just saying stuff. Moving on. Do you have favorite TV shows or films? What are you fancy? I mean, yeah.
Get me on TV shows. I'm a sucker for comedy. All comedy, but if I had to pick a favorite film, a favorite movie, that's another one's hard. Give me a genres, categories, but I will always pick Meet Me in St. Louis for my top favorite movie of all time, strictly because it's nostalgia for me. I was raised with it. it's meaningful for me and my family and my sisters and my cousins. We would watch it with my grandpa, and then we would wear all my grandma's phenomenal clothes that she's kept from the 40s and 50s, and we'd wear them as dress-ups, and we'd perform all the songs from it. It's a musical with Judy Garland, and so that anytime anyone asks what's my favorite movie, it's that, because I feel like if you're gonna answer that question, you need to pick a movie that does nothing but engulf you with the warmth and love and meaning to it. And it's Meet Me in St. Louis. My grandpa, who we would watch it with, he was a singer. And there's a scene in the movie where Judy Garland can't make it to the ball because her boyfriend doesn't have a tux, and it was all dramatic. And so she was upset that she couldn't go to the Christmas ball. And her grandpa walks into the room and introduces himself and says, "I'm going to be taking you to the ball." And I can't hold it in. I just bawl every time because I'm like, that's my grandpa. And Supreme, that's what my grandpa would have done. And yeah, so it's just, if I had to pick one, that's it. That's my favorite movie. Okay.
But now you said that, let's pick a genre. Do you have like a favorite comedy film?
Comedy film.
I mean, maybe. Or do you have a favorite comedian? Like, let's go there. What makes you laugh?
That's another hard one. I actually have a list because I'm ADHD. My phone is in my notes. It's just full of lists and notes, and it's pretty much my journal. And I have a list of all my favorite comedians, males and females. And I would say Norm MacDonald is up there.
Oh, rest in peace. Rest in power, Norm MacDonald.
Yeah. And obviously Chris Farley, and I do love a good Gene Wilder. He's one of my top favorites. Mel Brooks is up there as one of my top favorites. In fact, any Mel Brooks film is up there. I was raised by Mel Brooks. My father is practically Mel Brooks. He raised us on Spaceballs. I have a slew of them as far as like, and then I've got, you know, my favorite women comedians. I love a good female comedian that's not afraid to look ugly. Like, she's just silly. And so Tracy Ullman is one of my top favorites. Okay. I think she's one that is either underrated and people don't think of her. She's one of my top. She's not afraid to just look ridiculous and be silly. But you can get me talking all day long on comedians and my love and appreciation for comedy and how I think most comedians now are very philosophical. In fact, they've always been philosophical. They bring so much to reality of things that we need to. They're artists themselves.
How do you like Kate McKinnon, Saturday Night Live? She's another person who I don't think is afraid to be kind of ugly. You know, she was in like Ghostbusters.
Yes, she's fun. She's great. I do appreciate and love her and her talent, but I'm also like, I don't know. I question sometimes her authenticity. Like, is she just trying to be funny for attention, or is she really funny? And then she'll have moments where I'm like, okay, she's really funny. Yeah. So
interesting. I watched when Norm MacDonald had a show, because he did that on Netflix.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was very enjoyable. I don't know anybody else who really likes Norm MacDonald. Have you heard of Anthony Jeselnik?
No. I mean, I'm sure if I put a face.
Yeah, he's very dark. But he's kind of...
See, I love dark.
He's very dark.
I love dark. I love dry. And I think that's another reason why I like Norm. Norm is a type of comedy that I think a lot of people struggle with or don't understand. And I just love how everything was a joke to him. Like, every story he told, you're just like, you don't know where he's going with it. And then he always has, like, this dumb little dad punchline at the end. Or he always had that, like, grin on his face where you're just like,
yeah.
He lived comedy. He lived to make people laugh. And I, there's just something about his art that it's more complex than I think people realize, but yet it's very simple. Yeah.
I think he would sometimes do a joke as though he was trying to make himself laugh and you just happen to be there.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And I love
that. His own amusement or something. Yeah, that sound. You should look up Anthony Jeselnik.
I will.
He's done a recent series. Yeah, we went to see him live. Hilarious. Music, but book. Give me a book recommendation. Here we go.
I do not read because I am ADHD and I'm always like, if I had time to read, I have other stuff I need to be doing. No, it's just always been hard for me to read. I wish I was a reader. I wish I was one of those.
Do you do audiobooks or anything like that? Huh? Audiobooks or anything?
Well, I will say, I have listened to Harry Potter's on audio and some Lord of the Rings. But, like, I always said, I mean, I only read one book my whole adult life, all the way through. I made myself read it, and it was Catcher in the Rye. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I wouldn't even say it was that great, but I did read it, and I accomplished that. But I always said, like, if I did read, of course I would love the Harry Potters, just because I love the movies, and same with Lord of the Rings. And my husband just finished reading all of the Lord of the Rings with my son, and it was a big accomplishment that they were really proud of. I love to hear people talk about Lord of the Rings and get deep dives into it. But yeah, I'm not a reader. I mean, I'll read articles and I like to read, interesting things, but when it comes to just sitting down and reading a book, I can't sit still to do that.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
And like I said, if I have time to read, I should, I'll use my time to embroider instead, or to make a craft, or do something, work on something.
Yeah. I think if I have time to read, I've got 47 pairs of shoes kicking around my house that need to go back in the shoe boxes or something.
That too.
Yeah. Okay. Last one then. Is there an interesting fact that not a lot of people know about Stephanie Kelly Clark?
You know, you gave me this question before we did this, and I'm like, always like, that is the hardest question for me. And so I ask other people, and even ask my husband, he's like, I don't know, you're not interesting. Like, right, I can't think of anything interesting with you that people don't already know. But one thing I do find when I do tell people this, that's interesting. I don't know how interesting, but, or it's a lot of things that, oh, I didn't know that about you. I mean, there's a lot of things. I was a hardcore athlete in high school. I was a basketball player, and a lot of people are always surprised by that. A lot of people are surprised that I'm a twin, or that I grew up on a cattle farm. And
so that's three interesting things.
But the one thing I think I'm proud of that a lot of people don't know is, my senior year, won first place in duet improv with the speech tournament. So I always, like, I was in theater and I did all those things where I'd get on a stage and just act ridiculous, but I have huge stage fright. You get me on a stage acting like myself, I can't do it. I freeze. I can't. But you put me in a costume and I can act like someone else. Fantastic. I can do it. But I joined the speech club, and we went to a speech tournament. And on a whim, me and my friend decided to do it improvising. And so when you are in do it improv, you're given a topic, And then you have to, you have 20 minutes to come up with the idea, the story that you want to tell. And then they throw you out in front of a bunch of people and you have to improv this skit. And we had to do like three rounds. And our first one was a dating show. So we had to improv this dating show. And of course we went the comedy route on all the duets and we made it to the second round, and then we made it to the third round. And I think the third round was a nerd trying to ask a girl out on a date through MSN Messenger. It was back when MSN Messenger was brand new. And we just had to like make up, and it had to be a 5-minute skit. Wow. And it ended up being ridiculous. Like this guy ended up turning into a monster, a beast. Like it was so silly. It was so stupid. But we had people like rolling, laughing so hard. And we ended up winning first place. And I was like, I don't think I've ever been more proud of any trophy I've ever won. I was a state basketball champion. I had medals from being a track athlete. And then even being an artist, I've been in shows and I've won prizes and all kinds of things. But I am the most proud of that Do It Improv trophy. It's like my little tiny trophy that I won. Because that's the one thing I'm very proud of. But that's a very interesting thing that a lot of people don't know about me.
No, I love that. I love that. That's real, like, in the cold face, like, improv is just immediate, isn't it? There's no, like, you know, you've practiced that jump shot for a year or whatever.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a rush. And then when you get people reacting to you, it pushes you more. I've never done it since.
That's amazing. That is amazing. Stephanie Kelly Clark, thank you for having the Needle Exchange with me.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
For joining me on another Needle Exchange. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'd love to hear from you, so feel free to email hello@needle.exchange, that's needle.exchange, with any thoughts, comments or feedback. And if you want to keep up with all the news, sign up to the Needle Exchange mailing list at bit.ly/needle exchange. See you next time.